Welcome to Financial Repression Authority's Roundtable Insight, where the best fund managers, economists, and industry leaders discuss the key investment issues and challenges in the current macroeconomic environment.
Hi, welcome to FRA's Roundtable Insight. This is Richard Bernoulli. Today we have Charles Hugh Smith. He's author, leading global finance blogger, and America's philosopher, we call him. He's the author of several books on our economy and society, including A Radically Beneficial World, Automation, Technology, and Creating Jobs for All, Resistance, Revolution, Liberation, A Model for Positive Change, The Nearly Free University and the Emerging Economy, and Pathfinding Our Destiny, Preventing the Final Fall of Our Democratic Republic, and also Will You Be Richer or Poorer? He also has a most recent book that we did a podcast on called Global Crisis National Renewal, A Grand Strategy for the United States. His blog of twominds.com is one of CNBC's top alternative finance sites. Welcome, Charles.
Thank you, Richard. I'm looking forward to our discussion today of the Great Reset and your answer to the Great Reset, the Great Awakening.
Yes, a fascinating topic, and we thought we would break it down into two parts. One is the first would be a focus on the Great Reset from the World Economic Forum, that Great Reset agenda, and then another subsequent podcast program that focuses on an alternative approach to the Great Reset that we're calling the Great Awakening.
Well, why don't you, you've written an extensive, very insightful paper on describing the Great Reset. And maybe you could just start by introducing some of the concepts and that you've summarized in that paper about the Great Reset.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, we have the paper published in a few places. One is, of course, on our media website, where you can read it in full, and also you can download the entire article in PDF format. We also have it published at the Austrian Economic Center in Vienna, Austria, and also in Europe in the German language at the Hayek Institute. So yeah, let's take a look. The paper begins with exploring the World Economic Forum, and what they have is this Great Reset agenda. We talk about the forum in terms of it being an international organization that was established in 1971 as a nonprofit foundation. It's headquartered in Geneva, Switzerland. From their website, it states the World Economic Forum engages the foremost political, business, cultural, and other leaders of society to share global, regional, and industry agendas. So they developed this agenda over the years called the Great Reset. It's a whole bunch of programs and initiatives. There's actually a wheel diagram that we include in the paper that comes from the World Economic Forum website. And it gives all of the listings of the programs and initiatives on the outer wheel. Then on the inner wheel are the themes. So you can take a look at that. And so the thing that I want to mention today is what happened is this Great Reset agenda was launched essentially at the time of the COVID-19 crisis. And you know, one big question is, why was it launched at that time? Like, what was so unique about that time frame? And there's been a lot of discussion on this, especially recently. There's been a former BlackRock executive, Edward Dowd, that has talked about this, and also a former Goldman Sachs executive, Leslie Manoukian, that has also talked about this in terms of what happened at that time. There's also a book that was written by Klaus Schwab called In terms of the book, it's called the COVID-19, The Great Reset. And in that book, it gives five big theme areas that they want to cover in this Great Reset. So there's the economic reset, the societal reset, geopolitical reset, environmental reset, and technological reset. So when COVID happened, they came out and said, we're looking at this as a very narrow window of opportunity, in their words, to implement this. And a lot of leaders in the government and different countries came out with the same exact words. It's also been in line with, you may have heard, Build Back Better. And so this whole book represents the Great Reset agenda. Now, why at that time? So that's what we want to explore initially. Well, what happened was there was a crisis in the repo market. And this leads to our article that we emphasize that this is first and foremost and of the highest priority, a financial reset. So that is really the focus of all of this. There's other aspects of the reset, as I mentioned, but first and foremost, a financial reset. And what happened at that time in 2019, around the September-October timeframe, there was a crisis in the repo market, repurchase agreement. This is an overnight lending type of market where banks lend to each other for very short-term loans, could be a day, 2 days perhaps, 3 days at most. And the U.S. banks refused or were reluctant to lend to European banks, essentially. And why was that? Because during the financial crisis of 2008, there was a lot of debt, right? That was the whole debt crisis. And U.S. banks were restructured. A lot of their debt was offloaded or restructured. And so they were in a better position than European banks, which didn't do that since the 2008 crisis. And so at that time, 2019, it came to a head and they basically said enough is enough. This whole unsustainable debt, it's just come to a head, and we are not going to lend. So the interest rate shot up to 10%. The U.S. Federal Reserve Central Bank had to step in and began providing liquidity to the market. And this continued on till the third week of March 2020. When each day during that week, I remember distinctly, there was a liquefaction of 50 to 80 billion per day by the Fed. It was just insane. And that's when the whole COVID lockdown was announced. Now, it's hard to sort of link the two or say they were related, but that's what it looks like. And what happened is, as I mentioned, we see this as a very first and foremost focus on resetting the economy, in particular, the level of unsustainable debt by governments globally, and especially in the indebted Western world, as well as unfunded liabilities globally, but also especially in the indebted Western world. So those two things, unsustainable government debt and the unfunded liabilities, we see as the primary drivers of this economic reset that we see as the focal point for the overall Great Reset. You have any comments or observations on that, Charles?
Yeah, thank you, Richard. I do want to just add a little bit of context, is that the financial system that you're describing, which is, you know, highly indebted and highly leveraged, it's globalized. And that's why it's a global reset, right? It's not just one country or one region or one bank that's the problem. It's all now tied together so tightly, what we call in systems a tightly bound system. They have to save the entire system or they've got nothing. So just to go back to the 2008 financial crisis, which very quickly, almost brought down the entire structure you're talking about, the global financial crisis. The Federal Reserve backstopped or guaranteed about $14 trillion in financial instruments. And by some records, I believe the Levy Institute, they came up with $26 trillion. And so, you know, we throw these numbers around, but this system that we're describing with all the derivatives and all the counterparty instruments out there is unbelievably complicated and large. And so the impetus here that you're describing is clearly they want a once and for all reset, that the 2008 near collapse, basically the Fed just bailed out the world. But that was incomplete, right? It didn't stop the next bubble from forming. And in fact, now we have even more severe debt and leverage problems. So this is the impetus that you're describing, is like they're hoping to use whatever cover they have, COVID being one, but the other one being climate change, a cover story that allows them to completely reset these quadrillions, or just, you know, immense amounts of risk, risky debt, risky leverage out there in the global system. And they're not going to be able to fix it by just within one nation or even one alliance. It has to be global, or they haven't really solved the problem.
Yeah, exactly. And you mentioned climate change, and that's exactly how they began the marketing of this. So on their website, they posted an article called "The COVID-19 Recovery Can Be the Vaccine for Climate Change." So they essentially, in this article, linked COVID-19 and climate change together. So by how did they do this? They did it by highlighting the benefits of COVID-19 crisis in containing billions of people right around the world, containing them to their homes, helping to reduce carbon greenhouse gases, right? That was the pitch. And so this article emphasized how this could be done, you know, using this narrow window of opportunity in the COVID-19 crisis. And even the UN Green Climate Fund also wrote at that time, "While COVID-19 is causing untold suffering, the international response to this unprecedented health crisis in modern times offers an opportunity to direct finances towards bolstering climate action." So there you have it, the link. And the this would make like critical investments in climate resilient water resource management, healthcare facilities, agriculture, livelihoods, all of which are essential to subduing and overcoming the pandemic, the UN Green Climate Fund wrote. And also they finished it by saying, "Similarly, we will step up our efforts to catalyze green investment to relaunch economies on low emission climate resilient trajectory." So there you have it, the link between climate change and the COVID-19 recovery, with an emphasis on the containment of billions of people. You know, the whole idea of restricting movements, keeping people at home, you know, eventually the vaccine passports for access to buildings, crossing international borders. And so this whole framework was set up as a containment framework. And this is key to understand, because why did governments want to do this? As we mentioned at the outset, we see this financial reset as being first and foremost the highest priority of the Great Reset agenda that, you know, is attractive and became attractive to governments around the world. You know, for many years, the founder has been recruiting many, especially young leaders, in this global program that he's put together. And he even mentioned we have penetrated, that's the actual word he uses, penetrated government cabinets and distributed many copies of the books to market the whole Great Reset agenda. So there's no conspiracy here. It's essentially government subscribing to the agenda. And the reason, as we keep emphasizing, is essentially governments have reached the limits of their unsustainable government debt and unfunded liability. So they need a solution. They need a way out of this. And central banks over the years have been repressing interest rates to essentially zero. Governments have been borrowing more and more based on that, and it's basically reached the limit. So there's no choices left. Reckless government spending, borrowing have reached their limit. So it's essentially the end of using the principles of Keynesian economics. And in our second podcast, we'll talk about the Great Awakening, which is based on the principles of the Austrian school of economics. So that's coming in part two. But today, just focusing on the Great Reset, how it happened, why it happened, what it's about. Your thoughts?
Right. Yep. And about the mechanics of it, you have a nice chart here of the World Economic Forum's agenda systems, which puts in one place, summarizes the monitoring and control mechanisms that the Great Reset is promoting. And the use of social credit scoring and monitoring, I'll ask you to describe it in further depth, but I think it has an uncanny resemblance to the system that China is using. It's almost like a point by point copy of the Chinese social credit scoring system and monitoring and control. But I'll let you describe that in more depth.
Absolutely right. And so the emphasis here is on this framework that was set up initially with this marketing focus on COVID-19, linking it to the climate change issues and policies. And so we have this overall containment framework that has been set up. And why is this important on a financial reset? Well, there's a lot of aspects that government can basically take advantage of in this overall containment structure. And it actually solves many of the problems that have resulted or happened in the past, like with prior governments throughout the history of humankind, where you might have a government, a country go bankrupt, and then you've got bank runs, you've got people leaving either they're wealthy or they're educated, so that would represent wealth drain or brain drain, respectively. So a lot of that happens, and there's a nonlinear process. The country gets poor very quickly. Standard of living plummets. Currencies, spiral down. And so, this whole containment structure that has been built from COVID-19 and the programs and initiatives of the Great Reset, which we'll describe in a moment how that will be set up, essentially offer this containment framework. And so you have overall an unbelievable technology-driven financial repression type of infrastructure that will essentially perform monitoring controls to limit financial transactions, to limit and control travel movement between cities or between countries, and also provide means to increase repression on freedom of expression, democratic liberties, restrictions on access to services, countries, jurisdictions, and buildings. So it's overall essentially designed to eliminate bank runs, to prevent brain drain, wealth drain of citizens, that would potentially leave from the impoverished, heavily indebted countries, looking to relocate internationally to more attractive jurisdictions. and to allow repressive central bank policies such as negative interest rates and repressed interest rates to continue. Of course, on the negative interest rates, the hope is that it stimulates spending and economic growth. On continued repressed interest rates, the hope is that it allows easier servicing of the massive debt. Your thoughts, Charles?
Yeah, it's interesting, Richard, that this structure is remarkably totalitarian in its basic thrust. And it's also interesting that while I'm sure that the World Economic Forum gives lip service to democracy, a democracy doesn't really figure in this framework at all. It plays a zero role. In other words, it doesn't matter who you put in as an elected official. The idea is the government's sacrosanct policy will be this social credit monitoring and control system. So there's nothing in this setup that suggests that this totalitarian structure could be revoked by democracy. And I think that's remarkable. And, you know, you mentioned that about the negative interest rates. And you have the second step here is government digital ID system, which will be tied into central bank digital currencies as two more levels of control. So maybe you can describe those a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go into that. So first, we have a little chart that maps the system, the technology system, to the types of functionality that would be in those systems. So you would have access as a function, or identification as a function, authorization as a function, monitoring, control as a function, different types of controls like social credit scoring and social controls. And they can be implemented in different types of systems. So the systems we talk about are vaccine passports, government digital ID, and central bank digital currency. So the first step is what we've been going through so far to date. You know, the whole COVID-19 program has initiated the containing of billions of people around the world. They've set up this vaccine passport systems, in many cases associated with QR codes or mapped to QR codes. And the vaccine passport monitors, controls access to buildings, services, and even movement between countries. Like if you want to go to the airport, you have to present your vaccine passport in many countries now. And so it not only carries information about vaccinations, COVID-19 vaccinations, but has also location data that's initially applied to COVID-19 contact tracing, but later can be applied to GPS tracking based applications, especially in conjunction with the other systems I mentioned, like the central bank digital currency. So that's the first step. Now, a lot of people might say, well, a lot of these vaccine passports are going away. And while that's true, yes, the functions that are in the vaccine passport or in the QR codes, if they're not there in that particular country now, or they've been taken away, they can be implemented, these functions, the same functions, in the digital ID. So there's some overlap there. And some countries have had to back off, right, from the COVID-19 restrictions due to the backlash. But they have continued on with this program. If you notice, what has happened in many jurisdictions is as they relax the COVID-19 restrictions, they very quietly submitted like their RFPs, requests for proposals, and development timelines on the digital ID programs. So that's been happening all over. And so that's the second step here that we mentioned in the article, is setting up a government digital ID system. And there's a little nice pictorial diagram we have in there in terms of what it can do, what types of of interface that can do with social platforms, travel and mobility, financial services, healthcare, telecommunications, and, you know, like access to the internet even. So all of this can be a control system, a technology system that can provide these functions as we have them mapped in the little chart as part of step two. So the third step then leads to what is called a central bank digital currency, or CBDC as the acronym. And this is the major step at this point where you have everything coming together. So this is also, at this point, you have the inclusion of a social credit scoring system that is integrated. But essentially, it's the bank, the central bank, that has set up a government-based cryptocurrency for the country. That's essentially what this is. And a lot of people might say, well, we already have that. A lot of it is digital. But this is different. This is software control type of currency, cryptocurrency based, where you have the ability through software to create and apply a number of controls that can be very restrictive, very authoritarian. I'll give some examples shortly. And so when we have the step before that, you know, with the digital ID or the vaccine passport system, this leads to an account that can be set up at the central bank for the government-based crypto called the central bank digital currency. Your thoughts, Charles?
Yeah, and just to add a little context to that, the Federal Reserve here in the U.S. has already presented papers and sort of a roadmap to precisely what you're talking about, a digital cryptocurrency that would be basically delivered, if you will, through an account at the Federal Reserve, where the Federal Reserve would open an account for every, you know, citizen or taxpayer, and they could distribute money directly to each household or individual through this account. And of course, that would presumably work the other way too, where you could pay your taxes or something like that through this Federal Reserve account. So there's already work being done, I presume, in every central bank along these same lines. And so what I noticed, one of the things you mentioned here is demurrage, the idea that the currency could, like airline travel miles, that they could, the currency could just go to zero at some point to encourage you to use it or lose it.
Yeah, absolutely. So in this step in the article, we describe the mechanism of going from the old system to this new system. And this is where the addressing of the unsustainable debt and unfunded liabilities can happen. Now, there's some discussion still on how this is going to happen, and there's different ways it could happen. So one way is just a default by the government on debt. Of course, this is going to be very bad for pension funds, insurance companies that have a large part of their asset base, like in the form of government bonds. So how can that default happen? So it can happen in a few ways. One is like just outright default, where they just don't pay. But that's not as likely as another approach based on perpetual bonds is the term for it. And what that means is the conversion of the bonds, the current bonds, into a new type of bond called a perpetual bond, where the principal is never repaid. So that's like the default. Essentially, you'll never get repaid on the principal. So if you have a $100,000 bond, you'll never get that $100,000. What'll happen is there'll be only an annuity stream that represents the interest. So let's say 2%, $2,000 per year would be given to the bondholder only. So there would never be a repayment of the principal. So that's another way this could happen. Even a third type of mechanism is, as the central bank digital currency is implemented, the debt can be devalued significantly at that time. So maybe there's a conversion of one unit of the new currency for every 10 units of the old currency. So, you know, you've got a 1 to 10 conversion, like a 90% devaluation, if you will, on the currency purchasing power. And this would make the debt much more easily paid, you know, be serviced, right, with this devaluation. And by the way, as Charles references, these devaluations can happen anytime and at any point in the future by the central banks on the central bank digital currency. So you still have the fiat currency in place where it loses value over time, much as we still have today. So that type of feature would still be there. Your thoughts, Charles?
Yeah, what really strikes me as somebody who writes extensively about centralization and decentralization, and in my work, I view centralization as the problem itself. Never mind what's being centralized; just the fact that it's centralization creates a host of systemic problems that can't be overcome with more centralization. And so it's interesting that what the Great Reset blueprint doesn't say, and what it doesn't point out is that everything is becoming even more concentrated in the hands of the few. In other words, this whole agenda that we're describing is like extreme centralization. And the other point that it doesn't say is that it leaves the existing wealth and power inequality completely intact. In other words, it talks about the fourth industrial revolution and green tech and all these wonderful things, but it doesn't have any framework for reducing the vast concentration of wealth and power that we live with now. In other words, that's all going to be left intact. So the 3 billionaires that have more financial wealth than the bottom 50% of American households will still have their wealth and their private aircraft and, you know, the $100 million yachts and all that. And the 600 billionaires in the US that have far more wealth than the bottom 50% of households, they'll get to own the same things they own now, the fourth industrial revolution, green tech, you know, biopharmaceuticals, et cetera. So it's really striking that this whole Great Reset isn't actually addressing one of the core problems in humankind, which is this incredibly corrosive and unprecedented concentration of wealth and power in the hands of the few. The Great Reset is actually almost saying we love that and we're going to increase that even more. And I don't think that's a solution.
Yeah, absolutely. There's all this lip service, as we mentioned at the beginning with the book, the COVID-19 Great Reset book. They talk about a societal reset, and there's all this talk about meeting and working with the UN Sustainable Development Goals, which we see as very noble, but they're actually not meeting those goals or even making things worse. Like, you know, there was a certain level of meeting those goals before COVID-19. Now those attainment successes we see as being damaged or increasing in their shortcoming of meeting those goals. We actually have a lot of research on that. We keep a database of the increasing ways that they're failing to meet the UN Sustainable Development Goals, just making it everything worse. Of course, you know, one big one being wealth and income inequality worsening, right? This whole COVID-19 has managed to almost get rid of the entire middle class. You know, small, medium-sized businesses have gone bankrupt. A lot of people have lost their jobs. So it's just making everything worse as it evolves. Your thoughts?
Yeah, that's a very good point, Richard. And in general, centralization fails on multiple fronts. And of course, we're gonna get into that in part two about how to rectify that. But basically, if you're gonna leave the most rapacious and pathological players in charge, you're not gonna get some kind of warm and fuzzy results of green tech and the fourth industrial revolution solving all of humanity's problems.
Yeah.
Just the idea of concentrating this much wealth and power in the hands of the few, that can only, as you say, add new layers of problems or exacerbate existing problems. That can't be a solution.
Yeah.
Just from the basis of the way the system is designed. So, well, how would you, if you, do you have any closing comments on the Great Reset agenda?
Just to emphasize or give a few examples that we detail in the article on that central bank digital currency, because a lot of people may ask, well, how bad could it be? And how is that containment framework put together? So we list a few of those at the end of this first part. So here's some examples where, through software on that central bank digital currency system, they can make the currency expire after a certain amount of time, let's say 6 months. So you get your paycheck and then you have only 6 months to use that money, and then it just expires. So it's not like you can save money. So that could be programmed. It also could be programmed to forbid currency to be used outside of certain jurisdictions, like, outside of the country. So that way, if somebody were to escape from the country, there, once they try to access their account, it's not valid. It won't work. It won't be able to be used outside of the country. There's also the ability to software configure the payment of social credits or monetary units to award good behavior defined by the government, as defined by the government, whatever they deem that to be, or to take away negatively social credits to discourage what they would deem as bad behavior. And this could even be like a peaceful protest. This has already been happening in Canada here, right, with the recent example of the freezing of bank accounts by peaceful protesters. So, in their peaceful protest process, the government actually froze the bank accounts of the peaceful protesters. So that's one example that's already happening. And another central bank digital currency feature is confiscating social credits for any political dissidents or even social media posts that are contrary to the government narrative. That can also be programmed. And then another big one is wealth drain, right? So preventing funds, residents, or even citizens as like that, maybe they're educated or wealthy, from leaving the country for any reason, because the integration of the digital ID together with this can make this happen, this type of control. So as you can see, it's quite a dystopian type of system with the potential for little or no freedoms or liberties, not to mention the coercion of behavior, to be in alignment with whatever the government narrative is. And as mentioned, a lot of people will be unhappy with these pension funds going away, right, with their pensions. So this type of mechanism can control that unhappiness and that repressed anger, if you will. So it's quite dystopian, and it's essentially, in the end, against human nature. People are not going to be happy, in this type of system. And it eventually will fail because of that is what we see. So as you mentioned, Charles, on our next podcast program, we'd like to discuss an alternative approach that we're calling the Great Awakening Vision, that addresses the shortcomings, the defects of the Great Reset agenda, but that gets to the same goals in a way that is aligned with human nature and preserves freedoms and liberties for everyone, provides a more level setting in terms of wealth and income inequality, valuing sound money in terms of purchasing power, property rights, and also fostering direct democracy as well. So not authoritarian type of controls. But in the end, getting to these UN Sustainable Development Goals of helping society and the environment.
That sounds great, Richard. And my summary of our discussion of the Great Reset, I would just say is it's a system that's remarkably ripe for abuse, the Great Reset. So I look forward to discussing the Great Awakening in our next podcast.
Great. Awesome. Thank you so much, Charles. We're looking forward to that discussion. Thank you so much. Great. And we'll end it there.
The FRA Roundtable Insight Show is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the show each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Any discussions among the panel participants or responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the panel participants and do not take into consideration the listener's suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Please be advised that you invest or speculate at your own risk.